Welcome to the Uncovered Podcast, where we take a deeper look into the ideas, companies, and entrepreneurs that are creating the future and uncover the stories you haven't heard. Uncovered is presented by PJC, an early stage venture capital firm committed to supporting the next generation of entrepreneurs.
Welcome back to season two of the Uncovered Podcast, where we're exploring the world of corporate development. I'm here with my co-host, Rob May.
Hi, everybody.
And we have Brandon Greer from HubSpot today, who's going to be sharing some insights, and we're excited to have him on the show. How are you doing, Brandon?
Hey, what's going on? Excited to be on.
So, Brandon, why don't we kick it off by, you know, tell us a little bit about you and your background and how you got to corporate development at HubSpot.
Sure, of course. I'll warn you, it's a pretty short bio. So after I graduated, came to Boston and started a job at OpenView. So OpenView is a venture firm focused on enterprise software, and specifically expansion stage software companies. So think Series A through C. And they've got a bent toward companies that have, you know, what they sort of dubbed as a product-led growth engine. It's a big part of their focus. And not too uniquely, I felt the urge to in time, get a bit closer to a company and sort of see for myself how products and teams got built. And that's ultimately what led me to HubSpot. So I had admired HubSpot from afar for a while, actually well before I even got to OpenView, and initially joined to tackle elements of the business's platform strategy. So the business, just as background, has made a pretty remarkable transition from being this marketing point solution to over time, you know, rolling out additional features and product lines to become a bit of a suite and have a suite-based offering, and truly is in a place to say there's a both a suite and a platform around HubSpot today. So enormous extensibility and several APIs that folks are building on top of and with to augment the HubSpot experience. So I joined to be part of that mission. And in time, we noticed that there were a lot of these partners, a lot of folks in the market looking to receive investment from HubSpot as a strategic. And I made that transition over to the corp dev side of things just about a year ago and lead all things investment related to HubSpot.
So how does venture investing at HubSpot differ from venture investing in a more traditional sense at a fund such as OpenView? We'd love to learn a little bit more about that, especially I think our audience will benefit from understanding the differences. And when you're evaluating opportunities, what are you looking for?
For sure. You know, there's a difference in objective, right? You know, I think at the highest level, the objective of a venture firm, if it's not sort of tied to a company, is to win fantastic deals and to over time improve the value of their portfolio. It's pretty simple. And those actually rolled up to the mission at OpenView. And it makes sense. You know, you look for deals that sort of fit a certain criteria that sort of fit a profile and stage, and you do your best to partner with them to create a fantastic outcome for both parties. And so, you know, you're relatively agnostic to the exact sector or industry in most cases. If you're doing enterprise software broadly, it's a little bit different when you're at a company, because it's really about the orbit around that business and the spaces and categories within the business that are most interesting. And so HubSpot, like many strategic arms, invests off its balance sheet. And so we have earmarked a chunk of cash to make investments into sort of late C, Series A, Series B, and occasionally Series C rounds, where we think there is real and remarkable partnership potential. And so we don't really do investments unless we have a vision for where we can work with this business in a really meaningful way. And so the types of companies that are most attractive are ones that can augment the HubSpot experience and provide distinct value to our customer base. We've got dozens and dozens of thousands of paying customers who, like any software companies, you know, have a wish list, and they've got a wish list of features and integrations that can make the HubSpot experience more beautiful, more remarkable, more usable, and easier. And so a lot of my work is in conjunction with our product team, with our sales team, with our strategy org to figure out where can some interesting investments sit alongside partnerships. And so just to the original question, I think the main difference is the mandate, in that, you know, we're not solely return seeking, and we're not just concerned about sort of the the sort of ROI, if you will. But there's a lot of quantifiable ROI measured in the upside of a partnership that is unique to venture investing on behalf of a company, and HubSpot's no exception.
And so, Brandon, how do you think about, you know, sort of like hunting deals and looking for things that you think HubSpot should want to invest in strategically versus how much are you just fielding inbound from people who say, hey, we think we would be a good, you know, HubSpot investment?
You know, it's a mix, and I'm guessing this is the case for a lot of my peers in corporate venture, but it's a mix. You know, I think we do a lot of proactive and outbound based sourcing, and we get a lot of requests via inbound. We've got a forum, we've got a website, we've got a presence, and you know, participate in a lot of events like pitch competitions and whatnot throughout the ecosystem. And so, you know, having that presence alone, you know, drives a lot of the inbound requests. But a lot of our super exciting deals come also as referrals from people who understand the HubSpot business model, right? So we have a lot of friends of HubSpot and people within HubSpot who've got a really good pulse in the startup ecosystem and say, hey, this is a really interesting technology. I think we can do something cool here. Would it be interesting for ventures? And that becomes a prospect for us. And so I think, you know, we had the benefit of nearly 3,000 kind of on the ground people who, whether in sales or in a human resources position or in a strategy position, come across companies either as prospects of those companies, or they use them, or they are selling against them, or they are being asked if there's an integration into them. We've got a lot of data points and data sources, which is really one of the really cool competitive advantages of a strategic venture arm, is that you can kind of see you know, where the data points take you. And we use all of them. And so I would say, you know, there's a pretty rigorous exercise we do every year just to figure out what the approach is going to be for certain categories and certain spaces. And without getting into too many details, I think, you know, it's really interesting that we've got the options of do nothing. We've got the options of send the product team to go build it. We've got the option of let's look at acquiring this technology, this asset, and bringing it into the fold. And then we have the option of let's drive a really powerful partnership with an investment. And so that's my world. And it's interesting to have that as part of the toolkit. But companies at HubSpot scale and stage, you know, are benefited by having that optionality, in the sense that, you know, you can identify a problem and then have a set of potential fixes for it. So, you know, I think it's a mix. The most exciting things happen to come from people who know the pain points really well, and then our proactive diligence.
Brandon, once you get to that third pillar where you're like, I want to make an investment, what does the process look like? How fast can you get through that process? And how does it differ from maybe a more traditional fund process, or is it very similar?
You know, I think our sort of human capital against investments is lower than sort of a PJC or an institutional. You know, I think what's interesting is, you know, we're at the stage where our corp dev team, again, it's nascent and it's growing, but you know, we have a small but kind of mighty team. And so we try to be pretty intentional with our time in terms of like the timeline of a deal. We can move pretty quickly. I think strategic alignments, easy to ascertain if you know the problem well, and we try not to you know, waste time on that front. And we leave a lot of things to partnerships that are sort of your pure ecosystem partnerships, where people build something and they put it out into the marketplace. And so what's nice is that there really isn't a ton of downside for the companies that we say no to. It's really no to this, but yes to that. And so it's nice to have sort of multiple landing pads, one of which is for them to work with our ecosystem and partnerships team to build an interesting or remarkable partnership. And so those are the benefits, I think, to working with a HubSpot or one of our peers that invests, is that, you know, there's typically always a way to make something work. And so, you know, we try to be pretty quick on deciding, hey, is this a space where we want to really give a player a unique advantage? Because in some ways you're doing that, right? I mean, you know, to be on the cap table of a company and to say, hey, we're going to make this investment, almost, you know, inherently means we're kind of picking a favorite for the solution. And so while I don't think it's in practice really picking a favorite because we're careful about the way we sort of go to market with other solutions. I think it's interesting because there are a lot of problems that we actually syndicate out to the ecosystem. And so being mindful of that, we try to be pretty disciplined and discerning in the ones that we choose for investment. And it's reflected in our number of investments. And so, you know, I think it's interesting to sort of look at, you know, where we invest, but also kind of where we partner and where we can fill out white space with other types of solutions.
Have you gotten into a process where you pushed it forward as an investment and then it turned into an acquisition or vice versa? And how often do you see that occurring?
Well, I think that it's an interesting question. I mean, yes, I mean, there have been scenarios where, you know, something's been flagged on the acquisition front and it's been brought sort of down the pipe a little bit to investments and vice versa, where, you know, I sort of might bubble something up on the investment front and it makes sense to pursue it as an acquisition. And, you know, again, that continuum is actually to the company's benefit because we try to actually, you know, figure out something with most of the companies that come into our door. You know, and then the other really interesting goldmine we've got is the partnerships bucket. So, you know, we've got a group of partner managers who work with these integration partners day after day. And so they get a sense of, you know, X, Y, and Z company is growing at such an interesting clip. And we've got all these data points on them. And, you know, they're data points like, you know, integration install growth. You know, how many times has this integration been installed? And that's really interesting because it gives us a directional sense of where some of the activity is. It's almost like a heat map of where people are trying to build or augment the HubSpot experience, and I think it's an interesting data point for investment because we can almost use it to figure out some of those kind of key categories. But I think a lot of these deals exist on that continuum.
So Brandon, one of the things that we as VCs talk to our entrepreneurs about a lot is, you know, entrepreneurs, particularly if they haven't been through it before, they get very excited when a corp dev person reaches out to them and they think, oh my gosh, they're gonna acquire the company and everything else. And my experience being on the entrepreneur side was it took six discussions with six different companies over a 3-year period before we actually had an acquisition, you know, go through, because there are lots of reasons deals can fall apart at many different stages, you know, sort of pre-LOI, post-LOI, in diligence or whatever. And so I think sometimes entrepreneurs don't understand how unlikely it is when you even start kicking the tires on that it actually happens. But can you talk a little bit about, from your perspective, when things start off in a sort of good spot but end up not working out on the investment side or the M&A side, like what are some of the common causes and are any of them, you know, endemic to entrepreneurs that you go, oh, like I wish entrepreneurs would think about this a different way?
Yeah, you know, this is kind of the type of question where I can answer it, you know, almost arrogantly, as if, you know, it's all the entrepreneur's fault, but I really don't think it is. I think there are a lot of things that could change in corp dev processes, and this is not unique to HubSpot. I think this is something that, you know, generally speaking, could be a positive change. I think, you know, there is this assumption that, you know, the corp dev teams get to kind of call the shots, and I think even in investments that can be the case for VCs. And so the more kind of power I can place into an entrepreneur's hands, the happier I am. I think there's a two-way relationship to be struck with any corp dev conversation. And you know, what's interesting is you know, if something sort of goes to the back burner temporarily, you know, the question becomes, who's managing that cadence? Who's managing the relationship? And is it sort of on the entrepreneur to sort of keep folks updated on their processes, to sort of create urgency? You see all types of weird things that pop up, like, you know, oh, we're sort of in this process that really doesn't even exist, or, you know, these sort of strange kind of signals to create urgency, all the way to just going completely silent. And so I think there's this middle ground that everyone has to work to strike here, where you manage it like an active relationship, and you manage it like something that really should be nurtured over time. You know, as far as the sort of M&A conversations go and corp dev conversations tend to go, yeah, the numbers tend not to be in favor of the seller or the target in M&A parlance. I think there's you know, a sort of assumption that, you know, for every target that gets evaluated, you're also considering not only the peers in their space, so the sort of companies at that stage that solve a similar problem, but you're also considering the other options that we spoke to earlier, like, you know, thinking about some sort of a vendor partnership where we actually just we pay a company and do some sort of a rev share, or we do a venture-backed partnership, or we do a set of hiring to build the product, or we acquihire a small team, right, that can build it, and we sort of do a mix of the two. And so the options are so wide-ranging that I think, you know, it's not ever really company A versus company B. It's company A versus B, C, and D, but also versus options B, C, and D. And so I think that's something that can kind of cause things to lose accelerant. And I will say, like, the relationship piece is super important. Some of the really interesting outreach that we get is around kind of product updates, or you know, CEO kind of comes and says, hey, we haven't caught up in a while. No need to sort of, you know, do a formal call or anything, but, you know, we rolled out this feature, or our product team is working on this, thought it could be interesting and relevant to the HubSpot base or to the insert company base. And so over time, I think the better sense these companies have around the pain points of their potential buyer and the buyer's customers, the better they can manage it. And I think, you know, that should drive the outreach when you think about keeping up with some of the companies that you have in your orbit. And it's important to establish that orbit. I think even back to OpenView for a second, when we were looking at companies to invest in, one of the things we would, after figuring out sort of market size and economic momentum and sort of competitive differentiation, you would think about the exit scenarios and the exit environment. And so, you know, this is something that you want to be thinking about well before you raise capital, to make sure that, you know, you're in a market that has dynamics that work to the benefit of an exit, you know, be it a base of acquirers, or you really think you're building something that has sort of IPO standalone potential, and you know, or there's sort of, you know, an acquisitive appetite among the financials, whatever it may be. You want to have that orbit established, and to the extent HubSpot or any other company is in it, those are relationships you really want to manage, because, you know, as these VCs are underwriting those deals to X, Y, and Z market with X, Y, and Z acquirers, it is ultimately on you to kind of have the best relationship with them. I think, you know, there's a growing function within venture firms of having a corp dev person. Certainly that's the case at OpenView, and I know a lot of others do it too. But, you know, there is this growing, there is a sort of growing role where folks sort of liaise and service the in-between or middlewoman between, you know, corp dev teams of corporates and their startup portfolio companies. And so, all that said, I think it's important that the CEO continue to manage that relationship too.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you like it when companies send you sort of updates and kind of get to know you early. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs are always afraid of that, right? They don't want to talk to somebody until they're ready for a strategic investment or ready for an acquisition. You seem to be on the other side of that. Like, are there other things that you wish startups would, you know, do better to prepare, or you know, is it primarily just engaging with you guys early on?
You know, I try to be as humble as possible here. I mean, I would love to know kind of what the latest is with these startups. I can't see why, like, a perfectly packaged, you know, set of data and information and the perfect pitch at, you know, the perfect time, that feels like an anomaly. And so I would actually just sort of I'd err on the side of too much information too soon, then too little too late. And, you know, if I'm sort of trying to keep up with these companies and they come up, or someone in product kind of says, hey, what's the latest X, Y, and Z company, to be able to search and figure that out quickly and send that back to a GM on the product team or to whoever else, that's really powerful. And again, I think a lot of it's setting expectations. And so, you know, I've got CEO conversations on my calendar for this week. I expect many of these to be without a real next step. I mean, I think a lot of this is sort of just to continue to get and keep a pulse on these businesses and let them know that we're thinking about them and them us. But, you know, they are very natural and organic relationships when best executed. I think, you know, there is obviously a tendency to abstain from communication if you're not ready to pitch or you don't think you're ready to sell and all that. But I guess, you know, I'm also kind of sitting in the middle here. So I'm not like Mr. Acquisitions, nor am I Mr. Partnerships. I'm kind of, you know, in between. And so I tend to not be as scary to startups as like someone with like an M&A title might be. But I'm very much sort of on that spectrum with my coworkers. And so I try to be sort of that liaison as well and communicating information that could be interesting to the acquisitions team and vice versa for the partnerships team. Because, you know, the internal motion of a business is, you know, we've got these product discussions figuring out what we're going to build, and we've got these partnership groups that are working to kind of strike up new partnerships. And so the more information we have, the better, as I see it.
So, Brendan, VCs such as us usually tell founders to focus on selling to a strategic because, you know, perhaps they would pay more and there would be more value accreted to shareholders. Do you, you know, we've had at PJC a lot of success selling companies to both strategics and financial buyers. Would love to get your thoughts on, you know, that kind of, you know, that question. Do you think that it's better to position yourself towards a strategic early on, or do you think that that's not the case? You see a lot of businesses, so it would be interesting to get your thoughts on that.
You know, I think it comes down to what the founder wants to, right? I mean, I think, you know, if your goal is to maintain that real autonomy as the CEO of your business and you want to build something great at home or at your current company, you know, that's a question worth asking and reasking. I think, you know, selling to a strategic can be a fantastic outcome, but it could also be a suboptimal one to the extent, you know, your product gets rewritten in ways that you never really imagined it being written. And, you know, you're actually kind of being acquired for just a slice of the whole pie. And it's really the whole pie where the magic lies and exists. And so those are questions that are, you know, they can feel a little squishy and existential, but I do think they're worth asking because, you know the real kind of potential of your vision. You know, there's a scenario also where you're able to drive a lot of that vision at a company. And that's a lot of times the pitch for M&A, I think, here at HubSpot is that, you know, it's not like, you know, it's just kapoosh and, you know, you leave and you can't really be a part of seeing it through. I think there are a lot of scenarios where you can actually build something magical and great and have the you know, incremental or added distribution of a massive platform with a really, really strong base of leads, prospects, customers, and employees. And so, you know, even in isolation, if your business is interesting, it can be a lot more interesting when there's a powerful distribution engine and sort of the household name recognition of a HubSpot, at least as it relates to SMBs. You know, that gravitas added can be really interesting, and it may even sort of add some more spark, you know, to you as a CEO when you sort of see your product or your feature live in the accounts of tens of thousands of people.
Awesome. Well, Brendan, I think this has been really, really interesting to understand. You're the first person that we've done that's a little more on the investment side. So I think this has been really helpful for the entrepreneurs that'll be listening to this. So just want to thank you for being on the podcast today. People that are listening, thank you for listening. If you have questions that you'd like us to ask in the future or ideas for future series or guests on the show, please send those to podcast@pjc.vc. And we hope you'll go and listen to the rest of season 2.
Thanks for listening to the Uncovered Podcast. To learn more about PJC and the Uncovered Podcast, visit us at www.pjc.vc or email us at podcast@pjc.vc.